Hello, friends, and welcome to episode 1163 of the Juice Box Podcast. Hey, we're talking to Kim today. She's 47 years old, diagnosed with type 1 diabetes at 24, and her 13-year-old son also has type 1 diabetes. She was a singer. Wait, hold on a second. What is all this? I'm looking at my own notes here. She's a singer, started noticing her symptoms around the time of an audition in New York. You're going to love this one. I remember this one. Please don't forget that nothing you hear on the Juice Box Podcast should be considered advice, medical or otherwise. Always consult a physician before making any changes to your healthcare plan or becoming bold with insulin. Take the survey, t1dexchange.org/juicebox. U.S. residents who have type 1 diabetes or are the caregivers of type 1. They're looking for you to fill out a 10-minute survey. It's just 10 minutes. It's shorter than one of those like tests you take to find out what Hufflepuff you are. You understand what I'm saying? t1dexchange.org/juicebox. You can do it right from your phone. Do it. Do it now. I command you. When you place your first order for AG1 with my link, you'll get 5 free travel packs and a free year's supply of vitamin D. drinkag1.com/juicebox. This episode of the Juice Box Podcast is sponsored by Eversense. The Eversense CGM is more convenient, requiring only one sensor every 6 months. It offers more flexibility with its easy-on, easy-off smart transmitter and allows you to take a break when needed. EversenseCGM.com/juicebox. This show is sponsored today by the glucagon that my daughter carries, Gvoke HypoPen. Find out more at gvokeglucagon.com/juicebox.
All right. So my name is Kim. I'm 47 years old, and I was diagnosed with type 1 in December of 2000. And I have two kids, two boys, aged 15 and 13. And my 13-year-old is Ian, and he also has type 1. And he was diagnosed in May of 2018, and he was 8 at the time.
2018 at 8. You were 47 when you were diagnosed? No.
No. I'm 47 now.
Ah, okay.
And it was 23 years ago. So I was 24. I had just turned 24. Yeah. Well, my birthday is in September and it was December. So I was 24.
It's my favorite part about when we talk about age is people get so oddly specific. Like, oh, yeah. I'm like, you were 24, and people will go, well, I had just turned 24, and I'm like, is any of this relevant? Or
I know. Well, it kind of puts in perspective, like, when was it in the year, and yeah.
Well, I think it's accurate. It's for people, very obvious to me, that it's important to them for those small details to be correct for reasons that I think they don't see themselves as storytellers in this situation. Mm-hmm. It feels like they're biographers, I guess, to themselves. But mm-hmm. But keep in mind, if you're listening to the podcast, whether you were 23, almost 24, or just 24 when you were diagnosed, no one cares.
Right. It makes no difference.
It makes literally no difference to what we're saying. But everybody gets stuck on it. It's fascinating to me a little bit.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So you were out of college, obviously.
Yeah. I just finished graduate school, actually. I went 2 years for graduate school after college. And
show off. Go ahead.
And it was, so I graduated that May, and then this was December after that.
Were you by any chance with the person you're married to now at that point?
No. Uh-uh. We didn't meet till later, but gotcha. Yeah, I don't think I was in a relationship at the time.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So this diagnosis, it comes, are you living on your own? Or are you back at home with your parents?
No, I was living on my own in a college in the Midwest. Yeah, it was in the summer. Through the summer, I was like doing a show and kind of started noticing some weird things. And I remember my dad saying, like, I didn't even recognize you in the pictures, you know, because I had lost a lot of weight. And I guess I looked kind of gaunt in my face and all. But then it wasn't until the fall when I remember going, like, we used to go eat Mexican food a lot with mm-hmm. my friends, and I would come home and like wonder if I was going to make it to the bathroom, you know, because I mean, I guess my blood sugar was just so high and I didn't even know. And then my sister-in-law is a nurse and she at Thanksgiving tested my blood. So this is like a long, you know, months span, right? She tested my blood sugar and it said high on the meter. But then I had already planned to go to New York for a few days because I had some like auditions and things because I was a singer. That's what I did and do. And so I was like, well, I'm still going to go. They were like, well, I don't know if that's a good idea, but I went. I remember having to buy like reader's glasses because I couldn't see things. And anyway, so finally I went home to South Carolina for Christmas. And my parents had made an appointment for me with just our family doctor. Mm-hmm. And that's who diagnosed the type 1.
Yeah. See, I was confused at first. You were like, you just said a show. Like I knew that you were a performer, but I didn't know. Mm-hmm. So now I'm like getting it. So you were singing and dancing in like, what, like were you shooting for like Broadway type stuff or?
No, more. I mean, I studied classical voice. So, you know, I performed in operas and all. And the summer, so the opera company where I was living did, you know, traditional operas through the fall. And then the summertime, they did more light opera, like if you know mm-hmm. Gilbert and Sullivan or, you know, things like that, that are a little more on the lighter side with more dancing and all that. So I was in a show there.
Okay.
And started kind of noticing things. And then I kind of put it together just by researching, you know, looking up symptoms that I was experiencing. And I was like, oh, this might be something.
Well, I love the blend of South Carolina and opera because you said, you know, I do like operas and all. I was like, oh, this is terrific. Your sister-in-law, so one of your siblings was married already. She was a nurse.
Yeah, they had just got married. She's a nurse, and her mom has type 2, I believe, and so they had meters lying around, and she came over when I saw them at Thanksgiving, and she checked my blood sugar on the meter, and it just said hi, and she was like, you might want to get this checked out, and she started sending me all this pamphlets and stuff, you know, about type 1. And then, but yeah, I went to New York and I did the auditions. And I mean, I didn't even know, you know, I didn't know that it was that dire of a situation. I was 24.
Yeah, but Kim, you're 24 in a Duane Reade, I'm guessing, buying readers. Yes. And you don't think this might be problematic.
Yes. Well, I mean, I thought it was problematic, but I don't think I realized exactly.
You thought you just needed glasses, maybe.
I thought I just needed glasses. Like, all of a sudden, my eyes were bad. So,
how that happens. You know how that happens where your eyes just suddenly stop working.
When you're 24.
Yeah, you know how it goes.
Exactly.
Any other type 1 or autoimmune in your family?
Not a lot. So, my mom's father's mother, my great-grandmother, had type 1. In like the, you know, late 1800s, early 1900s. And she had 11 children and she lived into her 80s. And
Hold on. She didn't live into her 80s without insulin. So what, wait a minute.
So maybe I guess in the early 1900s, because my granddad was born in 1911 and he was like in the middle of 11 kids. So.
Oh, maybe she was diagnosed. If she lived till 80, she had to have insulin, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she had insulin.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. So, and that's 1921, 21, 22?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So around the time when I guess she was.
Yeah, okay. All right.
Starting to have children.
You said 1800s at first, and I was like, and then she died when she was two? Like, Yeah. And Buffalo Bill carried her body to the gravesite? Like, I was like, I'm not sure what's happening here. So I love, by the way, how people with autoimmune stuff in their family, like, is there other type 1 in your family? You're like, not a lot.
Well, I meant like not a lot of type 1.
No, I know. But other people would go, you know, other people who aren't indoctrinated into diabetes and autoimmune would be like, yes, there was a grandmother. And like, you're just not as much as you would think. How about other autoimmune? Do you look back and see it with anybody? Do you have any yourself?
I do. I have Hashimoto's. Mm-hmm. And my brother also just found out that he has Hashimoto's.
Look at him.
My mom does not have anything. And her, other than the grandmother with type 1, that's all that we know about. Like her siblings don't have anything. I've asked her. My dad's side of the family, I don't know so much about. He passed right after I was diagnosed.
I'm sorry.
And so, you know, we didn't at that time, didn't really talk much about autoimmune, and imagine didn't.
Sure.
Who didn't know about it. So I don't really know much about on his side of the family, but there's got to be, you know, if my brother has Hashimoto's and I have the two, and, you know, it's in there somewhere.
Can I ask, did your father pass from something medical? If you take insulin or sulfonylureas, you are at risk for your blood sugar going too low. You need a safety net when it matters most. Be ready with Gvoke HypoPen. My daughter carries Gvoke HypoPen everywhere she goes because it's a ready-to-use rescue pen for treating very low blood sugar in people with diabetes ages 2 and above that I trust. Low blood sugar emergencies can happen unexpectedly, and they demand quick action. Luckily, Gvoke HypoPen can be administered in 2 simple steps, even by yourself in certain situations. Show those around you where you store Gvoke HypoPen and how to use it. They need to know how to use Gvoke HypoPen before an emergency situation happens. Learn more about why Gvoke HypoPen is in Arden's Diabetes Toolkit at gvokeglucagon.com/juicebox. Gvoke shouldn't be used if you have a tumor in the gland on the top of your kidneys called a pheochromocytoma, or if you have a tumor in your pancreas called an insulinoma. Visit gvokeglucagon.com/risk for safety information. This episode of the Juice Box Podcast is sponsored by Eversense. And Eversense is the implantable CGM that lasts 6 months. EversenseCGM.com/juicebox. Have you ever been running out the door and knocked your CGM off? Or had somewhere to be and realized that your adhesive was about to fall off? That won't happen with Eversense. Eversense won't get sweaty and slide off. It won't bang into a door jam, and it lasts 6 months, not just a couple days or a week. The Eversense CGM has a silicon-based adhesive for its transmitter, which you change every day. So it's not one of those super sticky things that's designed to stay on you forever and ever, even though we know they don't work sometimes. But that's not the point. Because it's not that kind of adhesive, you shouldn't see any skin irritations. So if you've had skin irritations with other products, maybe you should try Eversense. Unique, implantable, and accurate. So if you're tired of dealing with things falling off or being too sticky or not sticky enough or not staying on for the life of the sensor, you probably want to check out Eversense. EversenseCGM.com/juicebox. Links in the show notes. Links at juiceboxpodcast.com.
Well, we think it was a heart attack. It was sudden. He was 53.
Oh, wow. I'm going to be 53 next year. So let's make up a different age when your dad died. Let's say he was 90. Okay.
Jeez. 90. That sounds good.
Way to panic me while we're watching, while we're making up. Like, oh my God, I just lost weight. Not now.
Yeah. Well, you're in better shape now for sure.
Oh my gosh. Oh, you've seen my transformation.
I have. Yeah. I listened to your diaries and it's fascinating.
Oh, thank you. My diaries where I'm like, either like jubilant or like, what is happening? Why can't this happen? Kim, yes. I would tell you right now that I'm a little constipated, but we're not in the Wegovy diaries, so I'm not going to tell you that.
Yeah. I've actually been considering the magnesium oxide myself.
Oh, just for a little poopy. Yeah, that's a nice idea. I went away this weekend and gave a talk, and I was so careful to take everything with me, and I took it while I was gone. Then I got home, and now I haven't taken it for like 2 days because when I got home, my pill case was empty, as if that's an excuse. But I'm also like, the craziest thing happened. Can I tell you something that would never make it in the podcast if we don't talk about it right here, unless it becomes like a horrible problem?
Oh gosh. Yeah.
I wanted to get home quickly to spend the day with my wife. Mm-hmm. So I flew out Friday morning to Orlando. I was on a plane at like 8 a.m. It was unpleasant. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to lie to you. And I arrived in Orlando like 10:30. I don't remember exactly when. I jumped in an Uber. I was at the hotel. I did what any reasonable person does when they arrive at a hotel. I unpacked my bag and ironed my clothes.
Oh, that's good of you.
Well, I had to be in front of people, so I didn't want to get caught with wrinkly stuff, so I took care of the ironing. I went out, I grabbed a sandwich, I brought it back, I ate it by the pool, actually. 20 minutes into that, I thought, why do people live here? It's so hot. And then I made my way back to the room, et cetera, and so on. Got up the next day, was brilliant all day giving my talks, but wanted to get home early for my wife. I had two options to fly on Sunday. One of them was a plane that took off at 6 a.m. Oh. And I, like an idiot, chose that flight.
Oh, God.
So I slept like 4.5 hours, woke up at 3 a.m. and got to the airport. Not too early. I'm not too late. It's all good. I sit down. I'm not there for 5 minutes. They push the flight back 1.5 hours. Mm. I was like, okay. That's fine. Oh, so God. I stay awake because I don't want to, like, you know, with my luck, they'll move the gate and I'll wake up and I'll be like, wait, I don't want to go to Paraguay. You know what I mean? Like, it's going to be like that. So I stay awake to get on the plane. We get on the plane. It's not very full. The stewardess comes around. She goes, hey, everybody can grab their own row. I don't know if you've ever been on a flight like that.
Where it's kind of empty.
Terrific, right? And I think I'm going to sleep. Yeah. So I laid down across the three seats. I curled up like a baby and I went to sleep. Well, it turns out the metal bar that separates the seat, like under the padding, and the padding is like a loose term because it wasn't very soft. Yeah. I must have laid right against something in my shoulder or my arm. And I think I pinched a nerve in my arm. And now it is 4 solid days later. And I have like numbness and tingling in my hand and up my arm still.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So I'm pretty sure, like, I have function of my hand. I don't want you to like think I'm like sitting here and it's like laying off to the side. Like, I have full function, but it feels like it's been asleep and it's almost done waking up.
Oh, I hate that.
Yeah. And I can't feel cold and hot correctly. And like water feels really ridiculous going over me. Anyway, I'm starting to panic about that.
Yeah. You should maybe.
Well, I'm old. So this could be it. This is how my arm falls off. You know what I mean? Like, for certain. Anyway, why does this come up? Because afterwards I thought, if I was still fat, I would have probably had enough padding for this not to happen. So I think losing weight's going to make me lose function of my right arm is what I'm getting at.
Trade-off. It's a trade-off.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I would have stayed chunky for that. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh. Oh, my God.
Anyway, I called a doctor. And he goes, mm-hmm. I'm not the right kind of doctor for that. I was like, oh, great. Thanks.
Wow. So, okay. So who is?
a neurologist or oddly a psychiatrist.
Really?
Ask why.
Why?
Uh-huh. Well, the neurologist for obvious reasons. The psychiatrist because apparently they're good with certain medications for depression that also help nerve pain.
Wow.
And I was like, huh, interesting. Uh-huh.
Interesting.
But like a real man, I'm just going to ignore it until it goes away.
Yeah.
That's all.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway.
I have a weird thing with my arm at the moment, and I think it's called shoulder impingement syndrome.
Do you think you have a frozen shoulder?
No, I don't know. I don't think it's frozen shoulder. I think it's, I also should go to the doctor about it, but it's like when I try to reach above my head, it pinches. Oh. Or if I try to reach behind my back, it pinches and it's kind of limited in the movement. And so it's something to do with the space in between the thing that sticks out of the edge of your shoulder blade.
Kim, this just happened to Arden.
Really?
It's so crazy you just said this.
Yeah.
Right? So Arden came home from college a couple of months ago. She's back now, but she came home for the summer and she wasn't home long. And she's like, oh, my shoulder's killing me. And we looked and she laid on the floor because she's like, she's a walk on my back girl. So she's like, walk on my back. And the muscles were like inflamed around her shoulder, like sticking up. And we tried to do everything we could with it, but it just wasn't going anywhere. So I took her to an orthopedic and he gets her in the office, does the little put your hands out to your side, raise them over your head. She had limited motion. It hurt moving her arm up, that kind of stuff, reach behind herself. He said, yeah, you have like an impingement in your shoulder. He stuck a needle in her shoulder and filled her with whatever magic he put in there. a cortisone or cortisol. Let me be honest. Yeah. I didn't ask. I just knew it was going to make her blood sugar go up for a couple of days, which it did. Yeah. But he sticks it in, like, behind her shoulder blade, a pretty, like, meaty needle, and pumps it in. She didn't feel the needle because he froze her skin first. But when he pumped the juice in, she was like, ooh. And then he took it out and had her just sit still for like 20, I'm not lying, 20, 30 seconds. And he goes, okay, try to lift your arm up over your head. And her arm shot up over her head like it was nothing.
Oh, my gosh.
And she's like, so, that's amazing. So
did it go away for good? Does she have any other issues with it now?
It's only been a few weeks, but she hasn't complained about it.
Wow.
She's also at college now, so I don't talk to her as much.
Yeah, that's the same thing. You know, you can't reach over your head. You can't do the thing where you like pull your arm in front of you and to stretch your arm. It hurts to like clasp a bra strap, that movement.
Yes. So apparently go to a orthopedic that does shoulders. He'll shoot cortisone or whatever the hell it is, like a steroid in your shoulder. You're going to need like 200 basal insulin percentage for about 3 days afterwards. Like, it was hard to bolus for things for 3 days. Like, she was getting a lot of insulin. And then you do physical therapy to strengthen around it. And apparently that's the fix.
Wow. Okay. Well, that's good.
Yeah.
That's
good. You got insurance? Or I mean, you're a dancer. I don't know. You might not have any money.
No. I'm a professor now, so we're good.
What do you teach now?
I teach voice lessons in a big music school in the Midwest. And I'm on the voice faculty there.
Kim, we're going to get to your diabetes and your kid's diabetes in a second. But can I ask one question before we move on?
Yes.
Why is my voice so pleasing in a spoken word, but I can't sing at all?
Oh, have you tried? I'm sure you can sing. You have a very resonant voice. Mm-hmm. Have you tried? Do you sing at all?
I mean, to myself, and it sounds bad.
Yeah. Well, that's to you, though, maybe. Not to anybody else.
No other people have commented.
Well, you should think about, like, let your singing voice kind of sit where your speaking voice is. So it's kind of in the same resonant place.
Oh, so I can't feature. I got to be in the background, right?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. I mean, you know, speaking is more of your thing, but, you know, you could work on it.
It feels like I have to learn how to play bass so I can yell master during Master of Puppets in my Metallica cover band. That seems like the only thing I'm going to get out of this. Is that right?
Maybe so.
Is this why that lady made me sing in the chorus when I was little?
Because you have a very resonant speaking voice. Yeah, and they probably assume,
she forced me.
I got a big booming singing voice also.
Nowadays, by the way, it would have been probably illegal the way she forced me to be in the chorus.
Oh, no.
she strong-armed me. She was okay, so I'm never going to, like, feature. Like, I can't do, like, Lady Gaga or something like that. I'm going to be in the background, like, adding depth to the song.
Yes. Yes. You're going to be in the choir, and when they need the low notes, that's going to be you.
Okay. Yeah. That doesn't sound like a lot of fun for me. Do people do that?
Or you could be, I mean, maybe be a baritone, you know, which is a... not the highest male voice, but the middle, kind of in the middle.
I don't know. You're trying to be nice, but I hear what you're saying. I can't sing. It's fine.
Oh, no. Well, I don't know. I've not heard you. I bet you could.
Could you, like, coach me up enough to, like, get me somewhere, do you think?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting. And that's what you do for a living, but in a college.
Yeah, I'm at a college, yeah.
How many people show up to sing at college and can't do it, percentage-wise? Like are bad singers but don't know it.
Well, I mean, in the school that I'm in, you have to audition. You have to prove that you, you know, have a singing voice. And, you know, most of them are there because they want to pursue singing in some form or fashion. But it's interesting. A lot of them can definitely sing, but, like, I'll have freshmen come in that, you know, don't know how to read music. They can't, you know, look at the music on the page and know what the notes are. So a lot of people can just sing for fun, but they don't really know the other parts that go into it.
So how many people show up at the audition that you're like, why would you come here? Like,
oh, yeah. We definitely get those.
Okay. But they don't know. Is that correct?
Yeah. You know, sometimes they don't know. Sometimes, you know, their grandmother has always said, oh, you have such a nice singing voice. But maybe they're just not meant to, like, really pursue it.
Yeah.
you know, in a professional level. Yeah. Some of them, you know, they come in, you're like, why are you here? Like, you shouldn't, this isn't for you.
Yeah. How, it would be like if I showed up at an MBA tryout is how it feels sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah.
How many people have a pleasing singing voice and it's technically fine, but soulless, and they don't know that about themselves either?
Yeah, that happens too, where it's just kind of, I don't know, they just, well, it becomes kind of just academic, where they're not really making music, they're not being musical. So you can teach that, and we have, you know, that's why you work with, so you have a singing teacher, you know, a technical singing teacher, that's what I do, but then we have people that are voice coaches that work more on the musical things, you know, how to express the music, and that can help.
I always think how sad it must be for your voice to actually sound good, and yet when you sing, it doesn't evoke anything from people. How close you are to the mountaintop at that point?
Right.
It would be upsetting to me.
And some of that comes with how they're using their voice. You know, sometimes they think, well, I'm just going to haul off and sing and try to be really loud. Mm-hmm. But then it just becomes like pressure and you feel like you're being yelled at.
I know what you mean.
Yeah. Yeah. Where it's just like, okay, you're loud. Great. That's all, you know. But then, but you can learn how to use your voice really effectively where it just kind of pierces your audience more. And yeah, it's more pleasing.
Like Janis Joplin is yelling at me, but I don't feel like I'm being yelled at.
Right. Yeah. Right. She had her own way of doing things, and maybe not always the healthiest, but definitely evoked something in people. I mean, people loved it. You know. Yeah.
I gotcha. Okay. So. Yeah. You're diagnosed in 2000 as an adult. Yeah. What's the transition like from, hey, I thought I was going to be a singer and a dancer, to I have diabetes?
Well, I mean, that didn't change. Like I kept going. But then I remember, so I think I started with like Humulin, I think. Mm-hmm. And then kind of quickly after that went to Novolog and Lantus. But I remember carrying it around with me. And it was kind of one of those things like, well, this is just what I have to do, you know. But I still kept doing, I mean, I was out of school at the time, but I was staying in the city where I was at graduate school and performing with the opera company there and doing some teaching. And I think I was maybe a little bit of like, well, I don't really know what I'm doing, but I'm just going to keep going. It didn't really stop me so much in a way of like, I didn't feel like, well, I can't do this anymore.
Okay. So your personality didn't like lend itself to you getting bowled over by the scenario.
No. Huh.
But then your father passes.
Yeah, yeah.
Does that impact the diabetes at all?
It did. I mean, you know, I was still at a time where I wasn't checking it all the time at that time, you know, and so I don't really know specifically from day to day, but I remember when he died, you know, it was traumatic and shocking and awful. But I had people telling me, like, you need to be careful, you know, you might, this might really affect you. Because I was, you know, fairly newly diagnosed still at that time. And so I don't know specifically, but he was the one that was with me when I got diagnosed and was kind of just like there to, you know, as the support person through the beginnings of it. Even though I wasn't living at home, like I was in touch with him a lot. And so I think I just kind of kept going because I knew that that was what he would want. Mm. Yeah, but it didn't, I moved, I lived in Boston, I lived in New York for a while, like I was on my own for a good bit and maybe just like not really knowing exactly
what you were doing,
what I'm doing.
What were your goals, like health-wise with diabetes? What were you trying to accomplish while you were living in those places? Like, was it A1C driven? Was it how you felt?
Yeah, it was kind of both. You know, I made sure that I was in with doctors quickly wherever I was living. It was definitely A1C driven. That was the big focus. Mm-hmm. And then also, you know, I remember I would keep the little log books and I wanted it to be under 200 and, you know, I definitely had the goal of trying to stay under 200, and I wanted my A1C. My A1C when I was diagnosed was around 7 something. I never went into hospital. Like, it was just with my family doctor, you know, right. Really kind of tried things over the phone, and I would report back to them what was going on. I think A1C was always the
your goal.
Thing that okay. I looked for.
And do you look back now? Do you have any complications at all?
No.
No. Mm-mm. Okay. So I don't feel like you, whatever you were doing was working for you.
Yeah.
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 Excellent.
Yeah. Even though the difference now, being able to see, you know, with the Dexcom and all that, I look back and I'm like, I was just kind of like floating through the wind a little bit and just kind of checking my meter when they told me that I should be checking it. But it wasn't as continuous as knowing where I am now.
Tell people the feeling of getting a CGM for the first time and having lived so long without one.
Yeah, so that was interesting because when I first got the CGM, it was hard to, you know, see on the screen if I was going up or if I was sitting too high. I felt like, oh gosh, I'm going to get in trouble or something. Or I didn't like seeing that so much.
Difficult for you to look at. Yeah, like literally like feeling like, oh gosh, this isn't going right. And having it in your face was hard.
Yes.
Okay.
And I remember I had the the little separate receiver that was like rectangle shape, and it was on the little leather pouch thing.
Yeah, I'm actually looking at one right now because I found it in a drawer, and I'm trying to decide if I should just throw it away or not.
Oh yeah, I still have mine too. Mm-hmm. I think that because that was with the G4. I started with the G4.
Right.
But I kept that on me, you know, I would check it. But then I remember when it was possible to put it on the phone through the app,
mm-hmm.
I didn't want to do that because I wanted to kind of keep it separate. Like I didn't want, you know, to have to see it all the time on my phone.
It
was in front of me that I would just like, this is the separate thing. Like I'll keep my diabetes kind of over here. And I was still, you know, very conscious of trying to stay in range and all keeping up with everything I was doing. But It was hard to get used to seeing it all the time.
Mm-hmm. Felt like pressure.
Yeah.
It mm-hmm. Does it feel like that now?
Oh no, huh?
Good. Now you see the benefits of having it, and
yes,
yeah,
oh, most definitely. Mm-hmm.
So when you when do you get the Hashimoto's diagnosis?
That was pretty soon after I was diagnosed. Mm-hmm. So let's see, 2000. So I moved to September 11th happened, and I was in New York City. So I only stayed there for like 3 months and then moved to Boston. And I had a great doctor at the hospital there. And it was when I was living there. So it was, you know, maybe a year and a half or so later.
And you're doing Synthroid for that?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. What are your TSH goals? Where does your doctor keep you at?
I just recently found out that I was above 5.
No, we don't want that.
So it's been a while, right, that I've been on the Synthroid, and everything has been, now I'm going to give you a plug because I love thyroid series. Oh. I learned so much from that.
I'm glad.
And I had always looked at the range, you know, they give you, right, mm-hmm. to stay in range when you have the blood work done. So now I'm more like, I want it to be like low, you know, under 2.
Good for you. Is that happening though?
So now it's happening, good. But there was a while. So at the beginning of this year, I had some blood work done. I was having a lot of weird symptoms. One, I was having a lot of like heart stuff going on. Like
palpitations?
It was like PVCs, preventricular contractions.
Mm-hmm.
So that freaked me out because, you know,
your dad. Heart
issues in my family. Exactly right.
Yeah.
Exactly. So I was really freaked out last summer with all of that going on. You know, that I was sent to a cardiologist and I did a stress test and all this stuff. And that was just really freaking me out. And then in January, I started with a new nurse practitioner, like a functional medicine kind of person. And she did a lot of blood work and turned out my TSH was 5 something.
Mm.
because it had been, I mean, probably for whatever reason, over 6 months since my last blood test. So, but then, so she increased the Synthroid and that fixed it all up. So last time I had it taken, it was like just under one. And, but the PVCs have stopped and all of those issues that I was having, I think all were coming from the elevated
tissue
levels.
In hindsight, did you have any other thyroid related issues that have cleared? Hair falling out? Oh yeah,
hair. My hair was falling out like crazy.
Weight gain?
Weight gain, mm-hmm. Yes.
Tired?
Yes. Sleeping all the time. Like I couldn't, my kids would make fun of me because I couldn't sit in front of the television without falling asleep. So,
by the way, if that didn't happen to you, your kids would make fun of you for something else, just so you know. Yeah.
I mean, I'm not like, I sleep a lot anyway. You know, I fall asleep a lot at night regardless.
Yeah.
Like it was more, it was definitely more.
Did the tiredness go away with the TSH come down or is it still with you?
I still fall asleep. But I think like the functioning through the day is much better. I don't feel exhausted like I was before.
Yeah. Don't overlook asking about like T3 supplementing too.
Yeah. So she, in those first tests, like she checked the T3 and it was okay.
Mm. Remember earlier when your TSH was okay, but you were falling asleep on the sofa?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. Right. I know. But because there are definitely the tired thing for sure lingers. So I wonder.
I'm telling you, Arden is not an upright living human being without Cytomel.
Okay.
Yes. Mm-hmm. She would just persevere through horrible exhaustion and sleep forever and then get up and be exhausted. And then you add the T3 and it's much different for her.
And does she take it because they saw like a deficit in her blood work or it just helps her no matter what?
She took it because I said, you have to help her. This isn't working.
We
had her TSH under 2 and she's still exhausted.
Yeah.
So sometimes you make it, but you can't take it up. Mm-hmm. You can't use it. And so by kind of giving you a little more, it sort of overloads the receptors and you actually get it.
Yeah.
That makes sense?
Yeah.
Might as well try.
Yeah.
You might need a very little bit. And if you have too much Cytomel, you'll know because you'll like clench your teeth and like your heart will race. Like it's not a thing you won't know is wrong if it's wrong. That's for sure.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Sounds like fun, right? Clenching your teeth.
Right.
My gosh.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I mean, I have found that I'm doing that now, clenching my teeth.
Mm-hmm. Are you?
I don't really know why, but I was just talking to my dentist about that actually.
I'll say something that sounds like a little hippie-ish, but look into some people take something called skull cap for teeth grinding.
Oh.
It's just a, hold on a second. I'll tell you what it is in a second.
Okay.
And then we're going to ask about your son. I'm typing. You're going to get a lot of pictures of guys with hats on at first. It's harder to type with a half numb arm, in case you're wondering.
Oh my gosh, I bet so. Especially, is your computer, like your keyboard kind of elevated or is it on the, I guess it doesn't really matter. You're still having to lift your arms up.
Yeah, my arm is like, skull cap's a supplement. It's not like anything crazy. Let me see what's in it. My son takes it for teeth grinding. Chinese skull cap is just a ground up root. Scutellaria balla, obviously something I can't say, but it's a ground up root and people sometimes take it, traditionally used to promote good night's sleep, supports a relaxation and steady nerves. That all sounds like a lot of hocus pocus, but you can try it. It's inexpensive and it helps with if it helps with your teeth grinding, say thank you. And if it doesn't, stop buying it.
Yeah.
And I'm not a doctor. There we go.
All right. I'll look into that. It's because it's interesting because I don't think I do it while I'm sleeping so much. Okay. I think it's just kind of like a nervous tic or something that I've kind of developed.
Fun.
The day. Because I'll just kind of realize, oh, my teeth are achy, you know?
Achy.
Where my molars are.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you're really biting down.
Yeah.
Oh, no kidding.
But yeah, I don't really realize it until I kind of look back and I'm like, oh.
You're going to crack a molar and end up with a root canal, you know?
Yeah, no, I don't
want that. You don't want that. Okay. Mm-mm. All right. So you're living your life with your diabetes. You meet a boy. Yeah. He ruins your life and marries you. you go along and you make some kids. When your son's diagnosed, do you think, well, yeah, obviously. Or do you think, wow, I'm bowled over by this?
Okay. So when I was having children, like thinking about it and all, it didn't really occur to me much. I mean, I just was more thinking about, can I have kids? You know, because you hear all the people saying, you know, the older thoughts of it's not possible. But so he was born, he was fine. And then we did TrialNet. And this was probably when he was about 1.5 or 2. And he came back with 4 of the antibodies. Mm. And that at that moment, I was like, oh my gosh, like this could really happen. And I think a lot of the kind of upset feeling of the possibility of all of it happened then. So we went and did one of the glucose tolerance tests to kind of start in with the trial stuff, but he didn't really handle that well. I mean, it's at least with the IV, the process of doing it. So I think we maybe did it twice and then just decided, like, if it's going to happen, it's going to happen. And I know this is really helpful for other people along the way, but it just wasn't working out so well for us to continue doing that. So
I hear what you're saying. Your kid's soft. No, I'm just kidding.
Or maybe mom was soft just watching. I don't know.
Yeah, I hear you.
Yeah.
But when he gets that return from the trial net and he's got 4, I mean, it's 4 of, there's only 5 markers, right? 5,
exactly.
So yeah. They tell you, It's reasonably certain he'll get type 1.
They said it's a possibility and it might, you know, just something to kind of keep an eye on. So they suggested, you know, keep checking his A1C because at the time he was like low 4s. Mm-hmm. And so we just kind of, every time we would go to the pediatrician and be like, yeah, this is what they showed and we need to kind of keep looking at this. And so like once a year, I think he would get an A1C check and it was going along okay. And then he was in second grade and it was spring break and we were at Disney World and he was having a hard time staying in lines, you know, without having to leave to go use the bathroom.
Yeah.
And he was wetting the bed more and he was never a bedwetter. And so we came back home and I noticed, you know, he was drinking a lot of water but I was kind of, I think, in a little denial, which I have some regret about now looking back on it because I probably waited a little bit longer than I should have before he was actually diagnosed. But, you know, my brain was telling me, oh, it's okay. Like he's not drinking as much water as he was and he hasn't wet the bed in a while. So maybe it's not so bad, but. Turned out we went to just a regular, so he had a birthday in April and it was like right after that, you know, he had his like normal checkup with the pediatrician and she noticed that his weight was lower than it was at the year before that checkup.
That's a major indicator for a growing child too.
It is. Yeah. Definitely. But she didn't go to the type one. She went to, well, you know, maybe there's something going on with growth things or growth hormones or something like that. So she said, let's just keep an eye on it. Just let me know, you know, maybe keep weighing him at home. Let me know. And I went home and I was like, no, like this, I know what this is.
Yeah.
And so I had my moment of like being really upset and kind of grieving the childhood that he was about to change, you know, and called the doctor back the next morning and said, I want to bring him in and get his A1C checked and get a, you know, finger stick.
Mm-hmm. By the way, you have a meter at your house, but okay.
I know, but I don't know.
You weren't up for finding out, right?
I didn't want to know. Right. I was too nervous about it.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just interesting that, you know, the pediatrician didn't go to that.
Well, also, you have a thyroid issue, and he's not growing, that, I mean, that even is an indicator there. So,
Right. Yeah. So we went back the next day. It was a Friday, and she, you know, the blood sugar didn't read on the meter because the one that they had couldn't read that high. And his A1C was like 14. Mm. So she said, you're going to go to the hospital. And where we live, the biggest like children's hospital is about an hour away.
Okay.
So we had to drive up there and I took him in. But by that time, like the day before, I had my, I'm really upset about all this and I have to cry about it. But that day I was like, okay, I know what this is. You know, we're going to get this figured out. And so we did. We went to the hospital and he was not in DKA, but he was, you know, it was 14 A1C. So we stayed there a couple of days.
Your other children don't have markers. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah.
Which Gilbert and Sullivan play does this most represent in your mind?
Oh, I don't know. Yeah. That's usually like happy and kind of political sagas. I don't know.
It doesn't line up with your current experience at all.
Right.
Yeah. I'm not a Gilbert and Sullivan dork like some people are. So I didn't know. Uh-huh. I couldn't make a good reference. I thought maybe you could whip one out, but nevertheless.
No, this is definitely more of a drama for sure.
How did your husband handle it?
Oh, he was great. I mean, he's more like the, okay, let's just get this done. Like, let's go pack. Gotta go. So he stayed home and my other son had a baseball game that night. And so he took him to the baseball game and I got in the car with Ian and off we went. And I think I kind of went into it like, I know all about this, you know, like this is my thing, right? I know what to do. I'll take care of him. And, you know, my husband and my other son came and did all of the education stuff with us, you know, and because he knew, you know, my husband knew a little bit about all the stuff that I was going through, but not really intimately. I mean, you know, like he wasn't watching my blood sugar numbers. He wasn't telling me what to bolus.
Right.
I did a lot of that by myself. I mean, he knew what to do for a low, but that was
18 years though of living together with that. And he really doesn't have a ton of information about it.
Right. Well, okay. I'm going to tell you a quick story. So we met at a summer theater in Maine.
Mm-hmm.
Dirty Dancing, but for singing operas. I see what happened.
Go ahead.
So we went back the next summer and, you know, I mean, I met him, this was 2003 and I had been, so about 2.5 to 3 years, right? I've been doing all this. And so one night, I don't really know exactly what happened, but this was the one and only time that I've ever kind of passed out from a low blood sugar. And so he called 911 and they came. And I remember waking up like being really upset that somebody had drank all of my orange juice because I guess he was trying to pour the orange juice in my mouth. And well, turned out, so I went to the ER and, you know, everything was okay the next day, but he proposed to me the next day. And so it was all planned. Like this was all coming in and I just had to throw this problem into
the... you passed out during the moment when you were going to get proposed to?
No, it was the next day. Oh, he was to propose to me. This was the night before.
He should have pushed it off a little bit, don't you think?
I know.
Boys are so silly. Yeah. Only a boy would watch you pass out from a low blood sugar, call 911 for you. You have to go through all that and go, yeah, we're still going to go through with the thing tomorrow.
Yeah, he did.
any girl in that situation would be like, I'm going to replan this for another time. And
maybe not today, but no, it all worked out. I mean, it was, you know, it was great. It was a great moment, but it was just because I remember I called my mom, you know, the next morning and he, I think, called his parents to tell them. But my mom obviously thought that I would be calling to tell her the good news, but I was calling to tell her about our trip to the emergency room. Mm-hmm. And so, but she didn't say anything. So then when I called her back later to say, oh, actually, you know, we're engaged.
Oh, your mom knew he was going to propose.
Yes. Yes.
Wow. How lucky that she doesn't blow it when you call.
I know.
Yeah.
she very easily could have.
Can you imagine you say hello and she's like, oh my God, I'm so excited. And you're like, what? I went to the hospital. How do you even know about this?
Exactly. Yes, exactly.
Was it a decent ring, Kim? Or
oh, it's a great ring.
Okay.
It's
all right. Well, then I guess it's fine.
Get it today. Yeah. Yeah.
As long as the money was spent. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's hilarious. So
that was the extent of, you know, his experience.
Yeah. He tried to drown you with orange juice. And when that didn't work, he's like, I know how to ruin her life. I'll marry her.
Right.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I'm joking. Marriage doesn't ruin your life, in case you're not married and you're listening.
Yeah, well.
I love to giggle about it so people who aren't married sit there going, oh my God, what is it I don't know? You'll find out.
Yeah, we're 20 years in together almost.
So, good for you. Yeah. That's lovely. I've been married 27 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's great. All. Everything's fine.
A lot of days there.
Yeah, no one's dead. What do you think of that?
Nobody's dead. That's good. Let's all aim for that.
My wife had to get up this morning at 2 a.m. to be on a call that is like a conference call that's happening in Switzerland.
Mm-hmm.
And last night, she had to go to bed at 8 at night to do that. And the last thing I said to her was, hey, when your alarm goes off at 2, please do not wake me up.
That's right. I will not get up with you. We joke about that too, because sometimes Brian has to get up early for trips or whatever, like international things too. And he'll be like, so if you wake up and you could just go down and make me some tea. And I'm like, no, I'm not. I mean, he's joking, but I'm like, I will not get up.
Oh, she was going to ask me. She was going to ask me to help with the dogs. I could see it coming a mile away. And I was like, that's not going to happen. You're going to get up earlier and take care of the dogs yourself. Leave me the hell out of this.
I'll be snoozing.
20 years ago, if she would have said this to me, I'd be like, yeah, I'll get on your schedule and I'll get up with you. It'll be fine.
Yeah.
That's not happening now.
No, not anymore.
Yeah. So your son's diagnosed. I wonder how much, if any, comfort does he have from the fact that you have diabetes? Is that like a benefit or a detraction, do you think?
I think it was a benefit talking back to that Dexcom receiver, for some reason, he always called it a Lucy wallet. I don't know where it came from.
What the hell is your kid doing with his spare time? Let me Google that. Go ahead.
No, I think it's just something that he came up with.
No, I think it's drug paraphernalia he knows about. Hold on a second. No. No, turns out it's not anything. Never mind.
Okay, good. Yeah, so he always referred to it as the Lucy wallet. And he would kind of, you know, look at it and play with it and close it up and... So I remember telling him, you're going to get your own Lucy wallet, you know, and you're going to do the things that I do and you're going to take insulin like I do. And so I think he was familiar enough with it to know what it was. And it wasn't going to be this big, scary, unknown thing. And he was very much also like, we got to the hospital and they were showing him how to, you know, giving him the shots and checking his blood sugar. And he was like, so all I have to do is just take a shot when I have to eat. He's like, I can do this, you know? And he very much had a, this is no big deal kind of attitude at the time.
What's that attitude now?
Now he would like to not have to deal with it.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, he's good about it. He knows what his goals are as far as staying in range and pre-bolusing and all of that, but it just doesn't always happen.
Mm. Well, he's 13.
He's 13. And he's growing, you know, I mean, he's growing now for sure. And, you know, so we've got a lot of hormones surging and some days are great and some days are not. And
yeah, I meant to ask you about that. So when you gave him Synthroid, did he start growing?
So he's not taking Synthroid. He does have Hashimoto's.
Okay.
But they haven't put him on any Synthroid yet. And I'm like, I'm not, you know, I keep wondering maybe if they should.
Yeah. What's his TSH?
His TSH, the last time we just had it checked and it was in the upper twos, like 2.9 something.
Yeah. Why not a little bit? Is he on the small side?
Is he what?
Is he on the small side?
Well, he, not now. He's always been average for his age group, you know, every time you look up the height averages. But my older son is huge. Like he's 6'3" and has always been really tall. And so Ian has always seemed small compared to Thomas. But if you look at averages, like he's always been right where he's supposed to be, right in the middle. You know, sometimes I wonder if maybe it's the Hashimoto's, because we just, so after I had all that blood work done and realized that my TSH was off, I went back to look at Ian's and I didn't even realize that he had the Hashimoto's because nobody even really talked about it, but it was discovered when he was diagnosed. But nobody talks about it in his, I mean, they'll check his TSH, they'll check him for celiac.
And they say he's in range and that's it.
They say he's in range and that's it. But Hashimoto's was never brought up.
Does he have any symptoms?
No. I mean, other than he has and always has had really dry skin. And I wonder if that might be related. Of course,
there's a symptom. Let's get the TSH down. That's all. Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't know if it would be, would he need it every day? Would it just be a...
No, it's every day. You get, yeah. It's just a small dose. That's all. It's a
really small dose. Yeah.
I want to tell you, there's a crazy amount of wallets with Lucille Ball on it available on the internet.
Oh, really?
I mean, just, is Lucille Ball still a very popular figure in the world? Because my God, do you have your options if you want a Lucille Ball wallet?
That is hilarious.
I'm not kidding. And by the way, only one with the peanuts on it. And it's not even Lucy. It's Peppermint Patty. Because
Lucy, I mean, that's not, I don't think that, she's not really well known in today's
culture. You wouldn't think.
You wouldn't think.
I mean, most people who know who Lucille Ball, well, yeah, you're old. But I mean, most people can't care about this, right?
Yeah.
Nah. I don't know. I don't like this at all. I might call this episode Lucille Ball Wallet.
Lucille Ball Wallet.
I don't know.
I wish I knew where he pulled that from, but he pulls a lot of stuff out of his mind that I don't know where it comes from.
A Lucy Wallet. What's he call his balls? A Lucy Wallet. You know what I mean, Kim? Maybe it's something about a pouch. Who knows what's going on here?
I don't know.
By the way, before I forget to say this, I know people who are from South Carolina who have two boys, and their boys' names are Ian and Thomas.
What?
Yeah, freaked me out when you said that. When you said Thomas just now, I was like, oh my God, why do I know that? And is that like a thing there? And she calls him Thomas, not Tom.
Yeah, right. So my dad was Thomas. So that's where we got it from. But he went by Tom. But Thomas is Thomas, our Thomas.
No kidding.
Yeah, that's why. And I don't know, because I haven't lived in South Carolina since I left to go to college.
It's weird. Listen, if Thomas was the one with type 1, this episode would definitely be called Thomas is our Thomas is our Thomas, because that's what you just said. And I would definitely make that the title instead. So your son's about where I expect a 13-year-old to be with diabetes. He's like, this sucks and I don't want to do this.
I'd rather not have to think about it.
Yeah, of course. Is he using an algorithm? Are you? What are both of you using?
Yes, we both have the Tandem with Control IQ.
Mm-hmm. With G6 right now.
Yes, G6 right now. Yeah. We actually just got the email about, do you want to be in the trial group that, you know, tries out the G7?
Did you say yes?
I said yes.
Good.
Yeah, they sent out, I guess they're going to just randomly pick some people to give it a try and see how it goes.
Yeah, that's nice.
Yeah. So
you'll love the G7. It is tiny.
That's good.
Yeah.
I mean, for me, I don't really care so much, but I think Ian will definitely appreciate that because he can, he always wants to make sure, like his, because he wears it on his arm and he wants to make sure it's covered up with his shirt. And,
This will be much easier to conceal if that's what he wants to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty great. It's very flat and much smaller. So good stuff.
Have you had any of the issues that some people have talked about with like the range and connectivity and things like that?
So Kim, let me just say a thing here that I feel like is obvious, but I guess it isn't. When companies make new stuff, they still tinker with it after it's out.
Yeah.
So if you've been using Dexcom for a long time, for example, you'll know that in the first few months of the first iteration of something new, they still like, it's never the same product 6 months later as it is the day it comes out. And I think those are software adjustments that they're making, obviously, because the hardware is set, right? So I don't pay a lot of attention when stuff comes out and they're like, this doesn't, like the Bluetooth isn't whatever people said, like, I just get the thing and then we use it. And so did Arden notice a Bluetooth issue? She did not. We had a couple of sensors in the very beginning that were like foobarred out of the box, and then mm-hmm. we haven't had that problem again.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe two of them. And so, but I don't know if maybe Arden just lives with her phone up her ass. Like maybe she's just never going to have a Bluetooth problem because she's not walking away from her phone.
Yeah, yeah.
But okay. I think, you know, I would tell you that Arden's using G7 now with, she's used it with Loop and she's now using it with IAPS. And uh-huh. we don't have any trouble with it at all.
Oh, good.
Yeah. That's good. So, yeah. I mean, I'm also, I don't know. I don't focus on that stuff, I guess. Like, if it was a problem for us, then you'd probably hear me constantly going, like, this thing doesn't work.
Yeah. Right.
But she's not having an issue with it.
That's good.
Yeah. But I think some people like to walk away from their phones a lot. And then they're like, my CGM doesn't work. And I'm like, well, it's Bluetooth. Mm-hmm. Bluetooth sucks to begin with. Mm-hmm. You know, so I don't know. Yeah, I wouldn't. I mean, from my experience, I don't think there's anything to worry about.
Yeah, I mean, I'm eager to get it. And I think as long as it works well enough to be able to keep up, you know, with the algorithm and stuff, then
yeah,
we'll be fine.
Mm-hmm. I also think because you're online, you have that thought because people complain. Yeah. People love to complain.
The
right?
people that complain are louder than the people that don't have issues.
right. And you're aware of it. Somebody listening right now who's never been on Facebook is like, what Bluetooth issue? I've been using this thing forever and it's fine. You know, so...
Yeah, people like to talk about it.
Well, listen, when something goes wrong, you try to figure out. I mean, I don't blame people for running to the internet and being like, hey, what's going on? But the thing that doesn't happen is they don't come online and say, hey, I have a 19-year-old iPhone. Mm-hmm. I've dropped it in the toilet 6 times. And my walls are made out of concrete in my house. And I'm having trouble with Bluetooth. You know, like, you don't get their full story. Not to say that some people aren't using brand new phones and it's just not working for them. I don't know. But I don't know. Like, it's a weird thing to me. Like, if your phone doesn't do a thing, you know, that you expect it to do, you don't then, I don't know. Like, if your phone's not connecting well to your headphones, you think, oh, there's something wrong with the headphones. But it very well might be just Bluetooth. Mm-hmm. And it's nothing's fault. It's, I don't know. I sound like I'm not making sense, but.
No, I understand what you mean.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, it's just, there's a lot of variables. You don't know what they all are. And when people are complaining online, you don't know what their variables are. And if theirs will be yours, but.
Not necessarily the new product.
Yeah, so. I'm going to go out on a limb and say, if it didn't work, the FDA wouldn't let them put it out.
Exactly. Yeah. And I remember you did, I guess you had a chat with the guy from Dexcom or something, and. He mentioned that they were still kind of futzing with it, you know?
Yeah, they turn little, like, they're turning dials behind the scenes. I've actually, in past iterations of it, I think, if I'm speaking out of school, I'm sorry, but I think they improved accuracy just by improving their soft, like, the algorithm that they're using.
Oh, wow.
You know, which is crazy. So, so it's... The filaments in your skin, it's in your interstitial fluid, it's making the reading. But then they were able to make an adjustment on the algorithm side, like to their software, basically. I don't know if it's actually called software because it's probably is printed on a circuit board somewhere. Anyway, I'm not very technical. But they were actually able to change that to do a more accurate interpretation of what it was reading. And so you didn't have to change the wire or anything that was on your side, like on the physical side, and they were still able to make accuracy better. This is going back a generation or so ago. But yeah, there's a lot to be done there. A lot I don't understand for sure.
Mm-hmm.
You know. But smaller, easier to use, shorter warm-up time, and you can pop one on before putting the other one on or taking the other one off. So simply stated, if Arden's got one on her left hip, and it's going to run out 4 hours from now, she can put a new one on her right hip, just put the applicator aside, hold on to it, and then hours later, disconnect the one that's operating, reconnect the new one, and now you've been wearing it for a couple of hours, and it's more accurate.
Oh, that's great. And then you don't have a gap.
Yeah. No, it's like basically no gap soaking.
That is cool.
Yeah. I don't know if soaking is a word everybody knows, but...
Yeah, I got it.
Uh-huh. You put on your CGM, and I think most people know in the first sometimes 12 hours or so, like CGMs can be like a little strange when you first put them on, and that's what they refer to as like a soaking in period. So you can kind of live soak it without losing your numbers from the already operating sensor.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That'll be great.
And it's got a, something very simple, which words are escaping me now. An amount of time between when it stops working and when it actually stops working, a grace period.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a grace period. Grace,
yeah. Yes.
My God, Kim, I couldn't find the word grace period to save my life.
I have that trouble too.
Well, I'm also like, in fairness, I'm sitting here thinking my pinky's numb. So
you're a little distracted.
I'm a little distracted with the idea that I'm not going to be able to feel my arm one day, but I hope I think it's going to get better, Kim, don't you?
Yes, definitely. It has to.
Why does it have to?
I was just trying to take a nap. Like,
you know, this is what I get. That's exactly. See, you and I agree. I woke up and I was like, what's wrong with my arm? And then I was like, oh, that'll go away in a second. And I'm walking through the airport and I'm like, this is not getting any better. And then I'm like out to my car and I'm like, hey, what the hell? And then I thought, I was just trying to get some goddamn sleep. This isn't fair. I actually thought I helped people with diabetes this weekend. Is this my gift?
Oh my God.
This is what I get.
This is it. Thank you so much.
So, Kim, is there anything we haven't talked about that we should have? Because I still have one more thing I want to do with you.
I mean, I think we've talked about a lot other than, you know, I was just going to like mention the interesting paradigm, or I don't know if what the right word is, but of like being type 1 mom and then the type 1 kid.
Please.
And kind of paying a little more attention to the type 1 kid sometimes. And you know, it's an interesting balance of remembering I need to take care of myself, you know, because I'll be really focused on, you know, especially back when you did like the calculation episodes, you know, of
the math.
Yeah. I really went in and tried to make sure like all of his settings were good for where he is based on those equations. And then I find myself going, oh, maybe I should do that for myself too. Like,
yeah, you think? It only would have taken 5 more minutes, Kim. You were already doing it.
I know, but it's interesting because, you know, I don't know if it becomes because he's younger and, you know, I don't know. I never went through puberty with all of this. You know, my life with diabetes has been a little bit more stable. I think maybe because of, I mean, still having the monthly stuff, but I don't know. I think I just want to make sure that he is set up well, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I just have to remember sometimes you also have diabetes.
Yeah, this isn't some weird psychological thing. You're not punishing yourself, martyring yourself, anything like that?
No.
Okay.
I think it's just he is the first focus for me sometimes.
Yeah.
And well, I just have to remind myself that I also have to, you know,
take care of yourself too.
Yeah.
I mean, plus he doesn't care.
I know.
You're like, we're going to make an adjustment. He's probably like, what? I don't care.
Like, just take the pump. I'm busy.
I was talking to Arden yesterday. Like, she calls a lot. Like, so we FaceTime. And so, like, she's doing homework. She's telling us all about how her day went so well at school. And the entire time she's talking, I'm thinking, you need to change your pump. Like,
yes.
I see it. It's been happening for 3 hours now. The pump is, the site's gone. It's just, it's done. Like, you know, like you're almost out of insulin. The site's not working as well. If you just change your pod right now, your blood sugar is going to come right back to where it belongs. And I did not say anything. I was so good. And because if I would have said Arden again, she would have been like, I know, Dad. Like, I'm not still, I'm an adult. I'm taking care of this. Or, what do you think? Take care of when you're not here. Like, I would have got that whole thing and it would have been upsetting to her. And I don't want to upset her. So I swallowed it. But then Kim, later last night, I FaceTimed her and she was like, now down to like, there was like 19 units left in the pod. And the units aside, the pod was just clearly not working well at that site anymore. So she calls me back. She's like, oh, I was in the shower and we're talking while she's drying her hair and stuff like that. And I still don't mention it. And she's like, I said, so what's up for tonight? She tells me about her evening and she's going to eat and everything. And I said, oh, do you have class in the morning? And she goes, no, I don't. I said, oh, okay, good. I was worried because I think you're going to run out of insulin before the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but I said, but if you don't have class in the morning, maybe it'll make it overnight. And then I just let it go. So I actually like reminded her that she needed a pump without reminding her that she needed a pump. Like, it wasn't super smooth, but it wasn't bad.
Like, I'm going to just drop this in here.
Yeah, let me just mention it off on the side here, like, but not directly. And then, I don't know, maybe 2 hours later, I saw her blood sugar, like, go back, like, tight into a tight range. And I looked on my Night Scout, and I could see that her pump now had, like, it was full. So she put a new pump on.
Nice.
And I was like, I did it. I tricked her.
Very subtly, very like, you're not going to get her upset so she can't talk back to you.
Yeah. I don't want to say this, Kim, in a way that makes people upset, but I deal with my daughter differently than I deal with my son. Mm-hmm. Like, I tried, boy, this is going to get me in trouble. Being direct with Arden worked really well until she became a lady.
Yeah.
And now being direct with her doesn't work the same way.
Uh-huh.
And whereas I could just, if that was my son, I could have just said, hey, you got to do this thing. Don't forget. And he'd go, yeah. And that would have been the end of it. Right. Yeah. So anyway, my wife's like, you can't just say it to her. I'm like, that's ridiculous. And she's like, well, are you ever going to learn? And I was like, probably not, but
I'll keep trying.
Yeah. I might try it with my wife too. I think she was like secretly telling me the same thing about herself.
This is how you need to talk to both of us.
Yeah. Just talk around it a little. And I'm like, oh, so exhausting, but okay.
Yeah.
All right, Kim. So here's my last question.
Okay.
If I came into your classroom, somehow I got through and you, what are some like things you would teach me? Like, are there practice things I could do? And can I do some of them right now with you before we get off the podcast?
Oh my gosh. Well, okay. So we do a lot of vocalizes, you know, like warm-ups, things to kind of practice.
Go ahead. I'm ready.
Well, I don't know. Can you do a lip trill? I don't know if we can do this in the microphone. Can you do a lip trill?
Like that?
Yeah. But you got to sustain it.
Wait, hold on. How the hell do you do that? Like that?
Uh-huh. Yeah, but see if you can.
For how long?
Vibrate a little longer.
How long?
Well, I mean, like, we'll do.
Like, oh, so it's a lot scale of air control then. That's what I'm working
on. Exactly. That's a big part of it.
Okay. Oh my gosh, this is hard. I have big lips.
Think about just getting the lip trill going, like without a note in it. Just.
Oh, I almost had it there. Yeah. My lips get dry and then they stop bouncing.
Mm-hmm.
Can I Vaseline them?
Do people? Well, that might help.
Do people know that I sit next to a giant jug of Vaseline when I make this podcast to keep my lips dry? Also, really? How do people keep their mouth wet when they're singing?
Well, just hydration, water. Oh,
so there's no answer. Like, I can't just take a pill. Fine.
No. Fine, unfortunately, no.
I thought you knew something, but okay, hold on. Oh, can I bring in fresh air through my nose while I'm doing it?
No, because you want the air to be moving out. Yes. Yeah. And
then. Ooh, it's a lot about a deep breath first. Hold on.
Yes. You need a deep breath.
I started laughing. Okay.
That's already better because it's about, you know, using the air is a big part of it.
Okay. Is this going to help me at all make the podcast or no?
Well, then, so when you do the lip trill, you want to think of. So do you feel the sound? If you feel the sound in your throat, you don't want that. You want to feel that the sound is kind of all
at the lips.
At the lips and in front of you. Yes.
I got it. Yes. I know. Oh,
that's
yeah.
Much better.
Okay. Yeah. So that's I stop emanating from my chest. I'm not making a noise. The lips are making the noise.
Exactly.
I got it. Okay. What's another one? Tell me another one.
Yeah. Okay. Let's see. You could also do... Well, so a lot of times can you think of a phrase that you like that you could sing? Do you know a song?
Oh my God. Hold on. I'm writing down to call this episode Lip Drill. a song. Oh, so here, this is interesting. Can we segue for a second? My wife gets so pissed at me. I don't know the words to songs.
Oh,
but recently I heard someone speaking about this and they said something that I resonated with. He said, I hear the words as another instrument, as music. And that's how I hear it. The words are like rhythm and beat. They're not, I don't care what they're saying. The words seem like music to me.
Yeah.
So as you asked me that question, I'm like, I don't know the words to any songs, even my favorite songs. So just give me one and I'll do yours.
Well, I mean, you can even just like on Happy Birthday.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So, because what you want to be able to do eventually is to like sing the phrase with the lip trill. So then you're getting the air going.
How in the, I almost cursed. How the, what do you mean? Like I need to make words while my lips are bouncing?
No.
Okay. Like, oh. Like Oh, damn.
Do it in your octave. No, I'm up an octave. You're not going to be, you're going to be. Lower. Right.
Oh, I had it for a second. Okay.
Hey, so you can't see me, but I have my hands kind of on either side of my, like if you're going to call out and go, hey,
yeah, right.
With your hands up around your mouth, hold your hands there while you do the lip trill.
Ooh, right. Ooh.
And just think of all the sound being in the front, like kind of called out
front.
You know, like on a megaphone.
Okay.
Of.
Hey, Kim, at what point am I going to pass the hell out from this?
I don't know.
Because I'm getting lightheaded.
Oh, gosh. Or you're going to have to start paying me for my time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. When does the meter start running? You're like, that's enough, buddy.
Well, I'll give you a few extra minutes.
I just keep thinking what you're going to hear next is this. And that's going to be my head slamming off this when I pass out. But
yeah. Well, it's funny because I'll have students that say that too. They're like, this is so much more air than I'm used to. And
it's a head rush.
What, you know, generates the, like the air is going to come through the vocal folds and that's what vibrates the folds. And
yeah. You know, my biggest problem, honestly, with all this is that when, I definitely think this is not a story I've ever told in the podcast, but when I was 5 years old, I got new dress shoes. Mm-hmm. And we were poor, so that was exciting. So I was coming down the stairs at my grandmother's house, and my uncle was across the room, and he was like, hey, I heard you got new dress shoes. And I, like an idiot, raised my foot up to show them to him, and then fell down the stairs.
Oh, no.
And my nose has never been the same since then.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, so I don't do well drawing air through my nose.
Mm-hmm.
I probably need that like deviated septum surgery.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
But maybe. I'm 52 and I think, what if I just made it to the end and didn't have to do that? Like, so, but I think, I wonder how it would change my voice actually.
Yeah. It's interesting. I've had a few students with that and they've had the surgery and then their voice is different because like the resonating cavities and all change.
Yeah.
Because the space is in there is changing.
Yeah. When I go off on a rant, I don't breathe through it. It's, it's like almost weird because I can't draw air in through my nose without it feeling forced.
Wow. Yeah. Interesting.
So yeah, anyway, my uncle needed to see my shoes and now I can't breathe, but
you can't breathe.
He's dead. Aww. So I won't.
You can't blame it on the uncle anymore.
No, I mean, he's been gone for a while. So. Yeah. But anyway, like it feels like if somebody gave me a breathe right strip, but it was made out of like an industrial clamp, maybe I could breathe better. I used to do a, you know, the nose spray that opens up the, like your nose.
Yes.
There were times that I'd have to do that before I made the podcast. Ooh. So I could kind of breathe while I was doing it. I've taught myself how to do it differently now though, but
wow.
Yeah. There's a little inside baseball.
If you're breathing through your mouth, I mean, you can breathe through your mouth, but then it gets dry and
you know, yeah, like I can breathe through my nose fine, but not while I'm speaking.
Mm-hmm.
So I would probably be a terrible singer. I'd probably pass out in 2 seconds.
Yeah.
Don't you think? It'd be like, oh, maybe. He sounds so amazing, but he keeps falling over.
He can't breathe though.
All right. Well, I think we all know that I should keep talking and not singing. It's bad.
Yeah. But even with your speaking voice, you know, think about it. Because you don't really want to feel it in your throat, you know, you want to feel it in the front of the face where it feels like resin. Like if you were going to hum, so you feel it. Can you feel buzzy in the front of the face?
I got it. Yeah. Yeah. I do feel it.
Yeah. So then try to keep your speaking voice there.
Okay.
So then, you know, it's taking pressure off the vocal folds and It's easier.
I do think that's where I speak from, honestly, because when I do the bumpers and the opens, and I like, I don't know if people realize it or not, but I'm sort of making fun of radio announcers when I do the opens of my podcast. But I'm like, this episode of the Juice Box Podcast. Yes. Like, I'm just amusing myself. I don't know what you guys think, to be perfectly honest. But I wanted there to be some difference between my voice. And this is overthinking, but I wanted there to be some difference in my voice when I'm selling to you than versus when I'm just speaking to you. But my voice is so kind of deep and right here, I can't actually change it that much. So I had to go for like over the top to make that happen.
Yeah. Anyway. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just, if you ever feel, if your voice is getting tired or something, I mean, do you ever experience that?
No. The only time I have trouble is I once had to give a talk, over a weekend, during Shabbos. And so there was no microphones in the room, and I had to project my own voice in a room full of like 400 people. And I was fried after that.
Yes. But you can do that by thinking of it all being, find the buzzy place in the front of your face and let your voice sit there. And instead of feeling like that, because that's how it'll project.
Oh, cool.
Resonance, you know, instead of it, feel like you have to kind of yell or.
Yeah, it feels like, it almost feels like it's coming from the back of your neck. I don't know, like another way to say that, but way more talk about how people's voices sound than most people care about, I'm going to say. So I'm going to let you go now. Most people are like, I have a thought. I don't even bother to think if it's right. And then it comes out of my mouth. And that's talking. You people are overcomplicating this. So
when you do it for your living, you know, you have to take care of yourself.
Yeah. No, it's a crazy thing. I usually record every day of the week. So even like getting sick, like there's sometimes I feel myself getting sick and I'm like, oh, no, that can't happen.
Not today.
No. You know when that can happen? Later, when I'm dead. Not now. I don't have any time for this. I got sick during the remastering of the Pro Tip series. I have to be honest, the opens are great because of that, because my voice was like extra deep.
Yes. Yeah.
But I just had to record in like shorter bursts, and then breathe, and then record, and then edit it together. So anyway, thank you, Kim. I really appreciate you having this conversation with me. Thanks, you very much.
This is a lot of fun.
Oh, good. I'm glad. Hold on for me one second.
Sure.
A huge thank you to Eversense CGM for sponsoring this episode of the podcast. Are you tired of having to change your sensor every 7 to 14 days? With the Eversense CGM, you just replace it once every 6 months via a simple in-office visit. Learn more and get started today at eversensecgm.com/juicebox. A huge thank you to one of today's sponsors, Gvoke Glucagon. Find out more about Gvoke HypoPen at gvokeglucagon.com/juicebox. You spell that GVOKEGLUCAGON.com/juicebox. If you're living with type 1 diabetes, the After Dark collection from the Juice Box Podcast is the only place to hear the stories that no one else talks about. From drugs to depression, self-harm, trauma, addiction, and so much more. Go to juiceboxpodcast.com, up in the menu, and click on After Dark. There you'll see a full list of all of the After Dark episodes. If you're not already subscribed or following in your favorite audio app, please take the time now to do that. It really helps the show. And get those automatic downloads set up so you never miss an episode. Thank you so much for listening. I'll be back very soon with another episode of the Juice Box Podcast. The episode you just heard was professionally edited by Wrong Way Recording. WrongWayRecording.com.